Good morning, everyone. A special welcome to any newcomers who are joining us for the first time today. I hope that all of you are finding a measure of stability and ease during these difficult times. I would like to begin my talk today with a moment of silence for Jacob Blake, the Black man who was critically injured after being shot by police in Kenosha, Wisconsin. May he recover fully, spiritually, physically, and emotionally. For his family and friends and the city of Kenosha, the police, the merchants and residents who are suffering in the aftermath of the shooting, especially those who died and those who live in fear from violence born of bigotry and ignorance. May we harness the energy we call unrest that simmers throughout the nation and in our hearts into loving resolve and courage. May we direct that energy to compassionate action to transform our individual and collective racial karma. May we not turn away, but rather accept this invitation to deepen our commitment to our bodhisattva vows. So I was going to give a talk today on generosity and dedicate it to you, the Clouds in Water Sangha, because your devotion to Dhanaparamita, generosity, has really inspired my own practice, and it has prompted me to spend time contemplating the vast dimensions of Dhanaparamita. But as the week progressed and as Kenosha burned in the aftermath of the shooting of another Black man, and the smoke from California fires fouled our own air, and I found my own passions chronically inflamed during the past week, a different talk began to emerge in my heart mind. So today I want to offer a talk on with a few reflections on fire.
The Buddha was acutely aware of the power of fire, and he frequently drew analogies to it to illustrate his teachings. And if we think about it, we realize that fire as a metaphor is also pervasive in our own culture. We talk about a speech being inflammatory. When a friend is upset or angry, we tell her to chill. When we are excited by a new idea or project, we say we are on fire. We observe someone make a bad decision and make a bad situation worse, and we say he added fuel to the fire. We talk about being burned out, and we talk about money burning a hole in our pockets. And when someone takes a foolish risk, we say she is playing with fire. So we likely don't think twice when we use these expressions, but to me, they convey a couple of things pretty clearly. First, I think that we instinctively understand the power of fire as both harmful and helpful, a builder and a destroyer. And second, that we have an appreciation for the potential of fire energy to manifest at any time. In the Pali Canon, which is the best record we have of the Buddha's original teachings, the Buddha uses fire to talk about the mind. The unawakened mind is compared to a burning fire. The awakened mind is like a fire gone out. And indeed, that is the translation of nirvana. Extinction, of fire. For example, he said, I have heard that on one occasion the Blessed One, while staying at Uravela on the bank of the Niranjara River, newly awakened, was sitting in the shade of the Bodhi tree for 7 days in one session, sensitive to the bliss of release. After the passing of those 7 days, on emerging from that concentration, he surveyed the world with the eye of an awakened one. As he did so, he saw living beings burning with the many fevers and aflame with the many fires born of greed, hatred, and delusion. So there are many colorful, always instructive, and sometimes deeply disturbing passages like this in the canon. For me, the most potent teaching is simply called the Fire Sermon. And that's what I want to spend most of my time talking about today. I first came across this teaching about 10 years ago, and it lit me on fire. I found it really spoke deeply to me. And I agree with one contemporary commentator who calls it one of the starkest, bluntest, and most powerful expressions of spiritual truth ever uttered. In our time and place, here and now, as we sit enveloped in smoke, we have a precious opportunity to look more deeply into this teaching. And it frankly puzzles me a little bit that we don't talk more about the Fire Sermon, because I think it could be an anthem for our age. I suspect its relative obscurity, at least in the West, and at least in my experience, is due to the fact that it's a text of early Buddhism, not Mahayana or Zen. If you have heard of the Fire Sermon, it might be because it is actually the title of the longest section of T.S. Eliot's poem, The Wasteland. Eliot took the title of that chapter from the Buddha's Fire Sermon, and in a footnote to The Wasteland, Eliot said he considered the Fire Sermon as significant as the Sermon on the Mount, which Jesus delivered relatively early in his ministry after he had finished fasting and meditating in the desert. The Sermon on the Mount contains some of Jesus' central teachings, such as the Beatitudes and the Lord's Prayer. Similarly, the Fire Sermon is a pithy exposition of the Buddha's central teachings, in particular, the Four Noble Truths, dependent co-origination, and the central role that our senses play in giving rise to suffering as well as liberation. It is said to have been the third teaching that the Buddha delivered. In it, he declares to the 1,000 monks who are listening that the world is burning. He says, "Monks, all is burning. And what is the all that is burning? The eye is burning. Forms are burning. Eye consciousness is burning. Eye contact is burning. And whatever there is that arises in dependence on eye contact, experienced as pleasure, pain, or neither pleasure nor pain, that too is burning. Burning with what? Burning with the fire of greed, the fire of hatred, the fire of delusion. Burning with birth, aging, and death, with sorrows, lamentations, pains, distresses, and despairs." And then he repeats the same verse for each of the other five sense spheres. The ear is burning, sounds are burning, the nose is burning, smells are burning, the tongue is burning, tastes are burning, the body is burning, tactile sensations are burning. Burning with what? Burning with the fire of greed, with the fire of hatred, with the fire of delusion, etc. So we hear in the fire sermon the same litany of sense experience as in the Heart Sutra. Eye and sight, ear and sound, tongue and taste, nose and smell, body and touch, mind and thought. In Buddhist thought, in our teachings, these are the building blocks of our carefully constructed frameworks, with self being the foundational constructed framework. Now, in the Heart Sutra, Avalokiteshvara, the Bodhisattva of compassion, by deeply practicing Dharma, is able to see that all of these sense spheres, and hence everything to which they give rise, are empty of solidity, permanence, and self-existence. And by their clear seeing, Avalokiteshvara is freed from all suffering and distress. They understand that there is nothing to cling to and no one who does the clinging. In the fire sermon, the Buddha lays bare how vulnerable we are to respond to the activity of our senses out of ignorance. To assume that whatever we see, hear, taste, touch, smell, and think is objective reality. The word from the Pali Canon for that is papancha, which means mental proliferation. And I want to give an example from my own life that in retrospect is quite comical. And I think it illustrates the power of papancha. I was three years ago, I sold my house and I moved into an apartment co-op. And I sat down one day after I had sold my house to fill out the application to get into this apartment co-op. And my eyes landed on the word application. That's all that happened. My eyes read the word application. And mine said, oh, applications can be denied. And then I went from there to, my God, my application is going to be denied. And I have already sold my house. And what am I going to do? I'm going to have to move in with Peg. I can't move in with Peg because of my cat. She can't take my cat. I'm going to have to get rid of my cat. What am I going to do? This all took place in the span of 15 seconds. I was sweating. My heart was beating. I had completely created this world. That is the power of papancha. I don't think that I am talking about being a particularly crazy person when I disclose this episode. I think this happens to us all the time. I think this might well be at the heart of the conspiratorial thinking that is going on in our culture right now to such detrimental effect. So unless we are really grounded in Dharma and are careful about understanding the power of our senses, we can easily morph them into I, me, and mine. And wherever there is I, me, and mine, there inevitably arises greed, hatred, and delusion. So what is the way out of this mosh pit of pain? Well, in the fire sermon, the Buddhist prescription is to fall out of love with the objects of our senses that we mistakenly to believe to be who we are. He says, seeing thus, monks, that is seeing the fires of greed, hatred, and delusion, the instructed noble disciple becomes disenchanted with the eye, disenchanted with forms, disenchanted with eye consciousness, disenchanted with eye contact, disenchanted with all feeling arisen via the eye, He becomes disenchanted with the ear, the nose, the tongue, the mind, with all feeling arisen via the senses. Through disenchantment, he becomes dispassionate. Through dispassion, he is liberated. When he is liberated, there comes the knowledge, I am liberated. Now, in the Buddha's time, the three poisons of greed, hatred, and delusion were understood strictly in individual terms. They were viewed as individual problems, and therefore, the remedy to them was also assumed to be individual. For example, sexual lust was the most frequently cited manifestation of greed. Liberation was therefore seen as an individual attainment that was achieved through the person's, the individual's meditative insight, disenchantment, and detachment. The mark of a liberated person was that he or she transcended worldly concerns. But our bodhisattva vows implore us to read the fire sermon in the context of our 21st century conditions, in the context of the very real fires that are burning all around us. More to the point, in the context of understanding the fuel of those fires. Clear seeing for us today, 21st century bodhisattvas in the United States of America. I apologize to anyone who's here who isn't in the United States of America. Clear seeing for us today means connecting the dots between our individual greed, hatred, and delusion and their collective and institutional manifestations. In a very real sense, and I think this has become so clear in the past 6 months of restrictions due to COVID, in the various upheavals in our culture, in a very real sense, for the bodhisattva, there is no such thing as personal or individual liberation. For we enact our vows with the knowledge that separation is delusion. In our context, liberation cannot be understood as an individual attainment. It must include collective action. The venerable Bhikkhu Bodhi, an esteemed scholar of early Buddhism, calls the three poisons primal motives that have been at the root of human misery since the dawn of history. Yet today, he says, they have acquired a potency that in the Buddha's time would have been unthinkable. Today, these three roots of the unwholesome have acquired a global reach. They've taken on systemic embodiments in organizations and institutions, in the formulation of policies, in the rules and protocols by which political and economic objectives are pursued. They exist not only as motives in individual minds, but as forces that energize colossal social systems spread out over the world, touching virtually everyone. Thus, they are now much more malignant than ever before. The manifestation of greed today that should concern us most is not the yearning for simple, sensual pleasures, but the lust for power, control, and domination. I feel like I'm preaching to the choir here. I feel like at Clouds, we know this. And we direct our practice towards supporting this point of view. In this great endeavor of liberation, we must stay rooted in the same essential insights the Buddha enunciated in the Fire Sermon and elsewhere, while also maintaining clear seeing of collective manifestations of greed, hatred, and delusion. How you see a problem defines how you respond. Seeing a collective problem requires a collective response. Our bodhisattva vow, it seems to me, requires nothing less. And this is not primarily a political or economic endeavor. This is deeply moral and spiritual. So, fire. In the opening of this talk, I referred to the energy of what the media calls unrest. It's been interesting for me to watch the evolution of the language around the upheavals that we have experienced since the murder of George Floyd. There were riots. They were called riots. It was called nights of violence. And now the agreed upon term seems to be unrest. As in, for example, a curfew was imposed in the Twin Cities after a night of unrest. I've been thinking about that word, and it strikes me that it is close to restlessness. And restlessness is one of the five hindrances to our practice. Unrest, restlessness, like most things, there's a razor's edge of difference between the two. I am not convinced that unrest is all that bad right now. I think it's a time for unrest, a time for really holding our assumptions up to the light, our views up to the light, and asking ourselves, is this true? Where am I attached? Where is greed, anger, and delusion taking root? Let's remember that unrest and restlessness are fire energy. In the ancient Vedic culture in which the Buddha taught, people believed that fire was present even when a flame wasn't manifest. Fire wasn't a phenomenon so much as it was a potential that was latent in everything. And it was capable of flaring up at any moment. I think that very well describes our lives as well. We are capable of flaring at any moment. And it's up to us to be engaged in determining whether that fire energy transforms in a way that destroys or in a way that builds up, that creates. It may do both. What begins as destruction may become creation and vice versa. Now, with a bow to my root teacher, our root teacher, Shakyamuni Buddha, and with apologies, deep apologies for any misunderstandings I have of this great teaching, I have taken the liberty of rewriting it. I wanted to rewrite it in a way that I hope illuminates and clarifies some of the collective manifestations of greed, hatred, and delusion in our time and place. So I'd like to offer it to you now. Noble friends, all is burning. And what is the all that is burning? Kenosha is burning. California is burning. Portland is burning. The Amazon is burning. The United States of America is burning. Views, ideas, and opinions are burning. Twitter is burning. Facebook is burning. Healthcare is burning. Wall Street is burning. The economy is burning. Democrats are burning. Republicans are burning. The left is burning. The right is burning. The House is burning. The Senate is burning. Racialized consciousness is burning. The throne of whiteness is burning. The media is burning. Corporations are burning. Ideologies are burning. Religions are burning. Detention centers are burning. Attachment to identity is burning. Burning with what? Burning with the fire of greed, burning with the fire of hatred, burning with the fire of delusion, burning with birth, aging and death, sorrows, lamentations, pains, displeasures, and sorrows. Seeing thus, beloved Sangha, the instructed noble disciples encourage one another and together discern how they enable and participate in inflaming the world. They allow their knowledge to guide their actions. Weary of the fires of greed, hatred, and delusion, they become on fire with compassion and withdraw their support from poisonous systems. Disenchanted with the intoxication of self, they quell the flames of hatred toward those who threaten their cherished views. Setting aside their self-referential point of view, they clearly see that earth, air, water, and fire, and all beings are none other than themselves. And they act like it. Grounded in Dharma, the noble disciples set aside expectation of comfort, reward, or results, and seek only to practice like their hair is on fire, for they know that it is. Through solidarity, they and the world are liberated. So that is all I have. I would like to invite your comments, your conversation, your questions, anything you would like to say at this point. The floor is yours. You can just unmute yourselves and talk.
Toku.
Yes, Mary Ellen, hi.
Hi. I just want to say thank you for your absolutely, I thought it was a brilliant talk. And it's something that touches us all because we have so much passion or fire. And one thing I realized while you were talking is that often I identify the passion as a strength in me, you know, like where I have this passion for equality, passion, but I think passion is akin to that fire. And we have to somehow realize that we don't need that passion. We need the calming. I don't know if I'm saying it right, but just I've often wondered or worried that without that passion, I'm not really feeling it properly. But often I think that's gotten in the way. So that's my thought, but thank you very much for your talk.
Well, that is very much worth examining, I think. So I salute you for just being aware of that. I am not sure that there is a hard and fast answer because we don't want to become robots, right? This practice is not about being robots. We simply need to be aware of how we are directing our energy. If we think of it in terms of energy, it becomes a little easier for me. Because it's easy to get into an argument, is passion good or is passion bad? And it's really about awareness of where that passion, how that passion is impacting you internally and how you are directing it. Thank you.
Toku?
Yes. Hi, Lori.
Hi. Two things. One is, would you be able to provide us with the text of what you just said, and then maybe side by side with the text from the Buddha? Because it's just fascinating to me how, where I would like to sort of look at how it's different.
You mean side by side with mine?
Yeah.
Sure.
That'd be good.
I'd be happy to do that. And I actually intended to copy the fire sermon and make it available this morning. But I woke up and discovered that the internet was down in my building. So I had to go elsewhere to give this talk. But I will do that. Yes, I will.
Okay. And then the second thing is that you talked about unrest and restlessness, which is a hindrance.
Yes.
But I'm wondering if it can be channeled into waking up.
So absolutely.
Yeah.
Oh, 100%. Yes. Yes. That's what I meant when I said, I'm not convinced that it's a bad thing to be enveloped in right now. Some situations call for unrest. Yeah.
Toku, this is Saiken. Just think about restlessness. Maybe your reference to T.S. Eliot may have brought this to me, but there's a poem by George Herbert, who was one of the metaphysical poets of the Jacobean era, called The Pulley, which is about rest and restlessness.
It's about, I'm sorry, did you say it's called The Pulley?
The Pulley, yes. I can't recite it, but the idea of it is that we have all these gifts, and then the last gift we get from God is restlessness. And The end of the poem says, if not the rest, then restlessness will be my breath. So it's an interesting little play with this concept, and I think it can lead us somewhere. I also just like to say that if we don't watch ourselves carefully, we can become the problem that we're trying to get rid of. We really can go over into bad places. So I appreciate very much what you said in the talk, and also I appreciate it's impossible not to have anger under the circumstances of what we're in, but how to deal with it and how to transform it into something useful is critical. That's all.
Thank you. Anybody else?
Okay. It's Sharon here. I have a comment. I was thinking about rest and unrest in the context of the murder of George Floyd. And as a white person, I think I'm most bothered by all my rest that was prior to his murder. And did that rest lead to the murder of George Floyd. So that's something that I've been thinking about. And realizing that rest has value, I think in that case, I can't think of value in that resting before. You know, so it's a idea of who's resting, when are they resting, how does unrest arise for different people of different races? Yeah. Is there a rest for people of color? I think not. I don't know that I can answer that as I'm white, but it's just something I've been thinking about. Thank you.
Thank you so much for sharing that. That is potent. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Toku. That, I just felt like that was so like illuminating, really, really, like I want to chew on it a little more. And it feels like to me it gave me some fairly specific things I can do. Rather than sometimes I'm like, what can I do? What can I do? What can I do? And to put out the fires of hatred, greed in myself. You know, last night I watched this documentary on basketball called Shut Up and Dribble. And it came, and I was listening to it, and I heard, you know, like there are different pieces like this, trying to bring it to the forefront of racism has been going on a long time. Like it's not a new thing, but it's kind of new. The urgency of it is new to me because I'm white and because I've been able to ignore it until now. And I feel like, I don't know, it was just, I felt when I saw that on, I was like kind of embarrassed, which I think is a good thing. You know, mm-hmm. I'm embarrassed and realized, oh, I've been messing up for like, God. And I think that the combination of the coronavirus keeping all of us, especially white people, inside and not distracted by our normal things to distract us, so that when these horrible things happen, because like I've been stuck inside, like the response to it is more than it would have been before because I'm not so distracted. I think that's a good thing. I think that's a good thing. That's all I know. That's what I wanted to say. I don't have any big answers for it, but I feel like your talk today was exactly the medicine I needed. So thank you.
I absolutely 100% agree with that. And I think the, distraction is kind of the delusion of choice for all of us because there's so much of it available. My gosh, there's so much of it available. And so part of our discipline is to choose to not be distracted, to take this opportunity and not hide, you know? Not hide from the reality. So thank you, Tyson. Thank you for your comment.
Hello, Toku. This is Candace.
Hi, Candace.
Hi, everyone. I appreciate everyone's comments so deeply. And I want to second the notion or the motion that what you wrote was brilliant. And I would say it's transformative for me. And I would like nothing better than to put that on my wall. Toku's rendering in contemporary language of the fire sermon or the fire prayer. And see that side by side with the Buddha's to say Kenosha is burning, Minneapolis is burning, Portland is burning, that, you know, that ignites our need for compassion. And just to see it in print, I think, is so relevant right now. I want to send a copy to everyone I know.
You know, I think it's important that it be a living document and that we add to it. And we add our own, the insights that we have about greed, anger, greed, hatred, and delusion. And make it a practice for us. It's a way to identify and stay clear. So.
Thank you for that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, if there's nothing else, I just want to thank you for your very kind attention, and I want to close with a little verse I jotted down from the wonderful poet Joy Harjo. She says, "Bless the poets, the workers for justice, the dancers of ceremony, the singers of heartache, the visionaries, all makers and carriers of fresh meaning. We will all make it through, despite politics and wars, despite failures and misunderstandings. There is only love."